Thanks for spending time with us on The Green this week. I'm Tom Byrne. Despite not being as well known as other leaders of his time, Absalom Jones's legacy is still felt today. Born into slavery in 18th century Delaware at a time when history was being debated as immoral and undemocratic, Jones would go on to become America's first black Episcopal priest and founder of both the first black Episcopal congregation and the first free African society. In this edition of History Matters, Delaware Public Media's Kyle McKinnon sits down with Philadelphia-based writer and educator Amy Jane Cohen for a closer look at Jones's life and lasting influence ahead of Juneteenth.
Can you give us a snapshot of who Absalom Jones was and his significance in the conversation we're having today?
As you mentioned, Kyle, Absalom Jones was born in Delaware, but when he was fairly young man, the man who enslaved him sold his mother and I believe a brother to someone else, kept Absalom and moved with him to Philadelphia. Absalom Jones, when he was in Philadelphia, was able to attend the Benezet School run by abolitionist Anthony Benezet. So he learned how to read and write. He was able to raise some funds by working for others, and he bought his wife out of slavery. Of course, he was more concerned about his wife's status because the status of a child would follow the status of a mother, and eventually bought himself out of slavery. He befriended Richard Allen, another great religious leader with some Delaware ties, and together, they were lay preachers at St. George's Church in the Old City section of Philadelphia. The Black community would worship at the church until one day they were told that they needed to move to different seats. And Absalom Jones and Richard Allen then led a walkout and never went back to St. George's. They formed something called the Free African Society that eventually led to Absalom Jones starting the African Episcopal Church of St. Thomas. The Free African Society was a mutual aid society, and he and Richard Allen were incredible leaders of this new building, blossoming, free Black community that from about 1790 to about 1840 was thriving in Philadelphia. Not thriving without challenges. There were, of course, many challenges, but Philadelphia became the center of free Black life. Absalom Jones, along with Richard Allen, who were contemporaries of the Founding Fathers, they were both friends with Dr. Benjamin Rush, a signer of the Declaration of Independence. They really were Founding Fathers themselves of the Black community, and Absalom Jones Church continues today. Richard Allen, his partner in so many different things, founded Mother Bethel Church and also the African Methodist Episcopal Denomination. And the Mother Bethel Church at 6th and Lombard is the land that has been continuously held by African Americans for more than any other piece of property in the entire country.
I'm glad you touched on a number of things there, because I would say Absalom Jones really is inseparable from Richard Allen. At least it seems how we, you know, when we look back at history, who again, Richard Allen was also enslaved in Delaware, you know, and then they became lifelong friends. And like you said, founded the Free African Society, among many other things. But, you know, stepping back a bit, it feels like Absalom Jones is one of many Black leaders that gets somewhat lost in the translation of history. For yourself as an educator, as a historian, as a writer who just published Black History in the Philadelphia Landscape, Deep Roots, Continuing Legacy, how does this happen? How does someone with the significance of an Absalom Jones or of a Richard Allen get lost in the translation of history?
Well, that's an interesting question that raises some other issues that I want to discuss. But in terms of how their stories were sort of lost to history, they were Black men, and we live in a white supremacist society, and the general historical narrative of American history that most of us learned in school. If we're talking about, you know, the late 18th century, we're talking about Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and James Madison, and we're not mentioning that most of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, as well as you know, George Washington, owned enslaved people. That's a whole other topic, but people like Richard Allen and Absalom Jones fall to the wayside. Now, with a revived interest in Black history, I've also found that at this point, if I'm talking to people about, you know, 18th, early 19th century Philadelphia, two of the names that they will know will be Richard Allen and Absalom Jones, but they didn't act alone. So, you know, if you dig a little deeper, there's a whole nother layer of free Black leaders. Maybe they, you know, aren't the marquee names, maybe like Jones and Allen, who at this point in the city are represented in markers and murals, and their churches are still standing and so forth. But there are a whole lot of other people, you know, whose stories still do remain to be told.
All that being said, you know, Absalom Jones, just speaking to him in particular, you know, his achievements are still commemorated on three Pennsylvania state historical markers. Delaware's state historical marker honors him in Milford. He also has a striking oil painting portrait that really stands alone at the Delaware Art Museum. When it comes to your book, things like your book, or, you know, it's clear that the roots of Black history run deep in this region. How do we ensure this kind of education or awareness, this history, you know, how do we ensure this history continues on? Is it through conversations like this, the quality of our school curriculums, which is certainly is an ongoing issue in and of itself, but, you know, what does that equation look like in your view?
Yeah, and I just want to double back a little bit. You mentioned the Raphael Peale portrait of Absalom Jones,
yes.
And I'm a very visual person, and if folks haven't seen that image, they should just Google it. It's so striking because it's a classical portrait and he looks so elegant and distinguished, and it was so unusual for its time. It's actually, I mean, I had to limit to the number of images I could have in my book. That image is included. And as soon as you say Absalom Jones, I'm picturing that. And to me, that's just the power of the visual. In terms of your other question, certainly I think a lot of it does have to do with curriculum. The danger we're in as a country is we already have kind of siloed and opposing news sources. If you're, you know, looking at cable news, you're seeing two different realities of what's going on today. Similarly, in schools in more progressive parts of the country, Black history really is being integrated much more into the curriculum. But then we have places like Florida, which famously are trying to all but eliminate talk of slavery and the history of white supremacy and, you know, this sort of whitewashed history that so many people my age and older were raised on. It is again becoming the reality for part of the country. So I feel like things are improving. I hear from more and more schools that are offering Black history courses, but again, those are, you know, certainly not in the Southern United States.
With Juneteenth on the horizon, I do want to touch on that briefly here. It's a day that honors how a little over 400 years ago in 1619, slavery officially began in America. Some say it marks more of a turning point, but we'll say it started with the sale of 20 humans in Virginia. And according to the Transatlantic Slave Trade Database, 12 and a half million Africans were shipped to the New World before slavery was abolished in 1865. But Amy, as we've said, in today's world where we see slavery and the Black experience being whittled down and redefined in certain state curriculums like Florida, how would you describe the meaning and significance of 1619 in, you know, this year, 2024?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I think one cannot understand American history without understanding the role of enslavement and the ongoing legacy of slavery. It simply can't be done because the country was literally built through slave labor. The wealth of the country was in large part the result of slave labor. The, as I mentioned earlier, the founding fathers who came up with the ideals of our country, to which we're still not fully living up, most of them were enslavers. It's just so fundamental to who we are as a nation that it just can't be separated. By thinking of 1619, it helps us to recognize three really significant things about the Black experience. One is that it is very long and deep in this country. Secondly, any progress that we've made has often been made because of Black people pushing the nation along. Thirdly, as we know, slavery didn't just end abruptly. It turned and morphed into other things. It morphed into Jim Crow and it morphed into segregation, and that fed into redlining. And so that might be a long answer, but it's a really fundamental question about the American story.
Thanks to writer and educator Amy Jane Cohen and R. Kyle McKinnon for showing us why history matters this week.